Welcome to the PeaceWorks Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Moles. I'm a pastor and biblical counselor who helps churches and families confront the evil of domestic violence and promote healthy, God-honoring relationships. And welcome back to the PeaceWorks Podcast, everyone. We're thrilled that you're joining us again. We're going to be talking about the effects of trauma on abusers today. But before we jump into that conversation, of course, I'm going to remind you of PeaceWorks University. PeaceWorks University is our online membership community. And if you are benefiting from the content that you're hearing every week here on the PeaceWorks Podcast, PeaceWorks University is your best next step. You can find out more about PeaceWorks University and all the content that we have in the membership at chrismoles.org. All right, so today we're talking about trauma. We had an interesting question that I received quite a bit, and although I would not consider myself an expert in trauma, I will say that all the years of doing this work, in particular with perpetrators, this is a common conversation and something that we have commonly addressed in group. So let me just turn to the question. The heading is, does PTSD cause a man to be abusive? I'm a faith-based counselor who works extensively with women who are in or coming out of domestic abuse. Recently, I was made aware of a few situations in which a husband has PTSD. And this is related to past service in the military. And this person is abusive and controlling because of his PTSD. One wife has said that her husband sometimes has violent episodes because of his PTSD. But I've heard you talk about how mental health, anger, and alcohol are not the cause of abuse. But could you speak more to the connection between PTSD and a perpetrator's choices to abuse? And I think that last part of the question is really, to me, the key. The connection between PTSD and choices, or making the choice to abuse. That's really the key. And so I do, as the questioner indicates, I hesitate to draw any direct causation. So I have often said, and will repeat here, that alcohol, for instance, doesn't cause anyone to be abusive. That was really the momentum or the motivation in many ways behind the temperance movement, was using the rationale that alcohol caused abuse. But we've since learned that alcohol does not create abusive behavior. It simply lowers one's inhibitions. So there is a connection. Certainly one is more capable of certain things while intoxicated. But what the alcohol does is reveal your values, right? Just changes your judgment, but not your values. Very similar with other substances. In mental health conditions, issues where individuals are struggling mentally, normally we would say that targeted behavior is the issue. For instance, an individual who's having a schizophrenic episode may be, through paranoia, become violent or aggressive with a caretaker or a family member in close proximity, but rarely is there a target, a specific target of the behavior. And even if there is, it's somewhat related to history and life and connectivity. So it's very unlikely, and I would say impossible, to create a pathology for abuse. But that brings us to the question at hand today is, what about trauma? What about individuals who have experienced trauma in their life? And I will say that individuals, in particularly those who are criminally charged with domestic abuse, those who are committing acts of abuse that have found themselves in the system, a high percentage of them may have experienced trauma. In fact, there's some studies that indicate that as high as 70% or near 70% of men involved in criminal groups for abuse have a high ACEs score, adverse childhood experiences. So even within those groups, there's a great chance that they experienced traumatic events as a child. And certainly PTSD, as the questioner indicates, from military service, we see that at a high rate within criminal groups, meaning that we have encountered a lot of individuals with past military or combat service. Maybe the largest subgroup, to be quite honest, occupationally or career-related, would be military service. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that PTSD or trauma is causing the abuse, because in the same regard, there are individuals who have suffered significant trauma that are not abusive. Individuals who've had high ACEs scores that are not abusive. There is something about trauma. There is something about these encounters that can perhaps make abusive and violent choices easier, perhaps can contribute, but it would be difficult to say that they are causative, meaning that if you removed or you dealt with the trauma, are you effectively dealing with the violence? I would say no, because those two issues, while connected, while somewhat related, are not interlinked or interdependent, that the abusive behavior must be taken account, taken responsibility for, the individual must be held accountable, they must own. And that's the temptation, right, is to say, well, because I've received a diagnosis of PTSD, it's causing the abuse. So once I, you know, get help for the trauma, then the abuse will end, therefore the abuse is not my responsibility. However, individuals who do trauma-informed interventions will tell you that it's a both and. It's we must deal with the trauma. It must be properly dealt with in an effective way, trauma-informed care, but at the same time, we are also accountable for our actions. We must take responsibility for the choices that we made. So the abuse in and of itself must still be held accountable. The individual must take ownership, and ownership is not, well, I have, quote unquote, have PTSD. Those two things can coincide, but they cannot be addressed simultaneously. Meaning that, I mean, they can be in parallel tracks, but not necessarily apples to apples. As if it's very similar to individuals who would say, well, I have an addiction, and if I could just get sober, then the abuse would stop. The abuse may change, but if there's not a heart change, there's not a ownership, accountability, repentance, and fruit of repentance, life change, then has the abuse really ended, or will it shift? That's my fear. And there is no real good evidence to say that this trauma is now producing the abuse. I think it could be said that the trauma may make the abusive behavior easier to engage in. It may make it more comfortable to engage in. Or depending upon the extent of the trauma or where the trauma began, maybe it normalizes the behavior, especially if you are a victim of childhood sexual assault or child abuse. But I would shy away from causation. The other part of the question that's interesting is the PTSD that's referenced in the question is military related. So I want to throw this out there that, yes, I have worked with many former military combat veterans who have engaged in criminal abuse. They've been arrested for domestic abuse. And while many of them were wrestling with and trying to address trauma, often, unfortunately, through self-medicating, I would not say that the traumatic experiences were the primary issue related to their military service in regards to the abuse. I would say that their training was a big part of the abuse. Now, I'm not saying that all military training is abusive. I'm just suggesting that individuals who are trained to control people, environments, outcomes, situations through force, understandably so, can easily, especially if they're traumatized, obviously with less resources or capacity to do so, can easily turn their partner into an enemy combatant, into a logistical situation to control. And so one of the things we often talk about with veterans is not so much how trauma is impacting their behavior, but how their training is impacting their behavior. Very similar to conversations we've had with law enforcement officers who, again, are trained to control situations, outcomes, circumstances, treating their partners as suspects as opposed to partners. And so when you're considering the idea of PTSD related to military service, not only are you wanting to address the trauma, which is important, to address the trauma, to provide for safety, to provide opportunities to be grounded and other aspects of care that can go into that, but you also want to address the ways in which they use their training and power and position in the home. And that goes really to the heart of what we deal with in interventions. So is your wife an enemy combatant? Are you attempting to subdue your family? Are you attempting to control an environment? Are you attempting to manage logistically to a point that you're suffocating the people in your life? Perhaps, right, we need to have some conversations about what it means to be a warrior in this context and what it means to be a husband and a father in this context and how they are two different places. In much the same way that we would have conversations regarding safety and removal from the danger of combat. So I do think there's more to the story sometimes with PTSD than just the traumatic event and its real effects on an individual's body, but also the way in which someone thinks and their worldview, which is right in our wheelhouse. So this is a word of encouragement, say, to biblical counselors, and this individual that asks the question is a faith-based counselor working with women. Those of us who are biblical counselors and faith-based counselors, we should not necessarily shy away from helping in these type of situations when an individual is suffering from aspects of trauma-related pain. Now, we want to find partnerships. We want to work with individuals who are addressing that. And that's one of the reasons, if you have done any training with me on perpetrator work, we'll talk about co-occurring issues, and we'll talk a great deal about partnerships with individuals who can address those. Things such as childhood sexual assault, PTSD related to military service, addiction, getting help in those areas that parallel or work alongside the intervention, to recognize that, yes, people who abuse have real problems in their life, real pressures in their life, and those pressures and problems and troubles affect the way they interact with the world, certainly. However, the abuse that they participate in, the violence that they use in the home, that is still their choice. And so having that rich balance of saying, we want to have compassion for those who have been hurting, right? But we also want to have hope for those who have done the hurting, and hold that in balance. And some of the ways it's I've heard it used in the past, especially with folks like Family Peace Initiative, is really, really good at this trauma-informed intervention work, where they talk about the cruelty that has been done to you and the cruelty that you've used against others. And sometimes those are, to the questioner's point, kind of like marble cake. They're kind of blended together. And so there are healthy it is healthy in many ways to find those connections. What we're guarding against is allowing those connections to become excuses. And I think that is what all of us would be in agreement. I mean, those of us that are on the trauma side and on the abuse intervention side, all of us are in agreement that we want the trauma effectively addressed without it becoming an excuse, because the abuse and the violence and the force is still a choice. And that's hard for many of us to hear. It's certainly hard for the perpetrator to hear, but I also think it's difficult for victims to hear, and I want us to be understanding of that. It would be so much nicer, or I think it would be more comforting, if the person that was supposed to love us was hurting us because of something outside their control, because of a substance or a problem made them do certain things. But I think there's a healthy balance here to say that, yes, the substance, the mental health problem, the trauma can contribute. It certainly can make abuse easier. It can certainly provide areas of pressure, but it doesn't excuse the abuse, that abuse is still a choice, and it must be addressed as a choice but not necessarily in isolation, as the trauma, past trauma like PTSD from military service or from childhood abuse or sexual assault or some aspect of trauma can and should be addressed, but not as the cure for abuse, because abuse is still wrapped within the hearts of individuals, and that has to be addressed through accountability and responsibility as well. So I hope that helps answer the question. We certainly want to have compassion for everyone who has experiencing pain, but we also want to be firm in promoting responsibility and accountability for those that are causing harm to others. And often it is a both and. Often it is a both and scenario, that an individual has been hurt and they are hurting. An individual has been cruel, but they've also received cruelty at some point in their life. So holding those in balance is really important, but not abandoning those principles of accountability, I think, is essential to see change and to protect those who are really in harm's way. Okay, I hope that was helpful today. I really appreciate the question. It's a great discussion. Would love to talk a little bit more perhaps about that with some friends of mine regarding trauma. I appreciate everybody being part of the Peaceworks podcast. You guys tuning in week after week just thrills our soul and keeps us going. So would you do us a favor and rate, review, subscribe, let the world know, the platform that you're listening on know, that you appreciate the Peaceworks podcast. All right, thanks again for listening, guys. Until next time, God bless.